Imagine a beautiful afternoon. The sun is shining and you get to enjoy it all because you just sat down on your John Deere mower. The smooth ride lets you escape into your yard. Intuitive controls make you feel like you're one with the machine. And with attachments for every season, you can enjoy it all year long. We could keep trying to put you in the moment, but to really understand what it's like to drive a John Deere mower, you just have to get in the seat. Learn more at johndeere.com/get in the seat or visit a dealer near you.
HD Smartcast.
You are listening to a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello and welcome to Mint Dialogues, a weekly podcast where we focus on the big questions in personal finance and investing. My name is Neil Borate and I head the personal finance team at Mint. I will be your host for this podcast. The podcast is a Mint production and is available on hdsmartcast.com, India's fastest growing podcast producing platform.
Hello all, welcome to Mint's Twitter Spaces. We hope you're all safe and healthy. So in this session, we'll discuss about should you invest in silver ETFs. With many fund houses queued up to launch silver exchange traded funds after SEBI's approval to do so in the last year, our panel discussed if one should consider investing in the white metal. I have with me my colleague Abhinav and Neil. They co-host this session. And now coming to the panel, we have Anil Gelani, Head of Passive Investments and Products, DSP Mutual Fund. Chintan Haria, Head Product and Strategy, ICICI Pru Mutual Fund. Kshitij Purohit, Lead Commodities and Currency, Capital YR Global. He'll be adding soon. And Preeti Rati Gupta, Founder, Lakshmi, a financial platform for women. Hi all, thank you for joining us today. In this session, we'll first talk about the product features of silver ETFs and then move to the investment rationale. Chintan, I would like to start with you first. ICICI Pru Mutual Fund recently launched the India's first silver ETF. We are curious to know how the investor in interest for this product has been, and also tell us the features of the product and how it works.
Yeah, thank you. It's been an interesting journey, which probably started a few years back. And after working with the regulator and the entire infrastructure in place, we are very happy to launch the first silver ETF in India. Started on 5th of Jan, is ending on 19th of Jan. And in terms of the features or in terms of the silver ETF, it is extremely simple. Much the same way as Indian investors are used to investing in gold ETFs by buying on the exchange, be it NSE or BSE. The units of the silver ETF will be traded on NSE and BSE. During the NFO period, of course, the investment will happen through the normal NFO route. That is, you can go on the app or the websites and invest. But from a structure perspective and an interest perspective, the moment the regulator announced that they would be coming out with guidelines for silver, we were receiving a lot of interest from investors who otherwise have been collecting silver in the form of physical asset. But managing silver in terms of physical asset is slightly difficult. And in the case of silver ETF, because the purity, quality and the consistency, as well as the ease with which people can invest and divest, and more importantly, you get a fair price, which is an international price converted into Indian rupee. So there is no element of anything to worry from an investor perspective. You get the right price, you get the right quality in terms of what you're getting as a backing. And we believe that this will be something which over a period of time will continue to be a good allocation for investors in terms of their
If I could just interrupt you there, when you say that it is the international price of silver converted to rupees, could you explain that a bit more? What all duties, etc., get incorporated?
Yeah, sure. So if we look at how gold and silver both get valued, you have the London Bullion Metal Association price, which is essentially the international price of silver or gold at the time of buying. You convert that into Indian rupee prices by the conversion rate of the RBI at that point of time. And then there are nominal charges, duties, which need to be paid. As far as GST is concerned, because we are registered, the GST component is a pass-through in that sense. So that is also added, but then the set-off comes into the system. So from an investor standpoint, this is probably one of the most efficient prices that an investor will get for silver, both at the time of buying and selling, and they will not have to subject themselves to the pain of losing out on account of the GST, as well as on account of the normal gap that is
Sorry,
there when
then,
you please go
how
ahead.
Much is the GST on physical silver if you go out and buy it in the physical market?
3% of the costs. So this also ensures that you are not held ransom to the fact that when you go and sell physical silver or buy physical silver, when we go to buy, there is a big premium, or there may be a big premium, or when you go to sell, there may be a discount. Typically, that's what happens when you deal in physical silver or gold. But in the case of ETF, that worry is not there from an investor standpoint. So simple product, whatever money will come into our silver ETF, we'll be buying LBMA approved silver from the authorized distribution, and storing it in vaults, which are again approved from a regulatory standpoint. And because we are...
When you say premium or discount, basically you're saying that there is a domestic market for silver and there is a price that comes out of demand and supply in the Indian domestic market. But that could be different from the world price, right? Converted to rupees. Is that what you mean?
What I mean is essentially, so of course, the Indian price or the rupee price in the actual physical market can be higher or lower, depending on the demand supply at that point of time. But more importantly, more than the premium or discount on account of demand supply, just the gap that is there in terms of, let's say, if you go to a jeweler, the price that the jeweler will quote to buy a gold or buy silver and the price that the jeweler will quote to sell silver will have a deviation of 2-4% depending on jeweler to jeweler, right? So it is this gap which I'm saying, the buying selling gap is significantly high when it comes to dealing in physical silver or gold. But while in the case of the ETFs, because it is exchange traded and the pricing is based on international price converted to Indian rupee, the spreads are not high. In fact, the spreads are not there itself, maybe 10, 20, 30, 40 basis points. So this gap is what I'm saying. See, the international, the domestic price is going at a premium or discount. That generally happens when there is suddenly a lockdown and, you know, there is a sudden demand for physical gold. So it does happen that physical gold or silver does go into premium or discount at times. But that is something which is a market-driven thing. I am basically more focusing on the fact that there is a gap in buying and selling of prices of jewelers also, which needs to be taken care of from an investor standpoint because you end up losing. And especially right. In the case of silver, just to add, and I'll conclude at that, because of the oxidation process when silver becomes black, that also further reduces the resale value of silver from a jewelry, acceptance of bars perspective. So all these issues which are there in physical silver are not there in ETFs because of the way it is managed. And we, in fact, have got few clients or few investors who are very happy to shift from their physical silver into the ETFs because it takes care of all these problems which they are otherwise facing. Thank you.
Chetan, one follow-up question. There are concerns that many times there is a disparity between the LBMA equivalent Indian rupee denominated silver prices and domestic prices, which might lead to some tracking error. How would you address that? And perhaps Anil, you would like to take that up?
Anil, you're on.
Sorry, yeah. So you mean the tracking error, right? With the underlying price. Well, I think, structurally, there will be some tracking error because, but I think Chintan very nicely outlined that if you go to look at it in the physical market, you know, there are a lot of other frictional costs which come into the picture, which are very smoothly avoided when you are doing it digitally through the ETF route. See, today, if you look at it as an investor, if you want to have some small component of silver in your investment portfolio as a prudent asset allocation or as a diversification, then you earlier had only two options. One is to go to like this kind of a physical market and buy it. Or second is, if you are a very large ticket size investor, you could go to a commodity exchange and buy derivatives like a contracts on, let's say, for example, MCX. Now there is a much more better availability, easy access. And for that, maybe some small differential might be there, but I think that it would be very small and it would not matter much to the overall investor's allocation and returns profile, you know, whether it's any ETF, like, you know, there will be always some tracking error. But if you compare it with the frictional cost involved in buying and selling physical precious metal bullion like a silver, then it's a far more superior and easier product to access.
Also, just to add to what Anil has mentioned, India being a market which is reasonably large And many Indian players or authorized participants are not only dealing in India, they are dealing outside as well. So if there is a very big disparity between the local price and the price outside, they themselves are there to take care of the arbitrage which is there and probably narrow down the prices. The only challenge or the only time when this probably is difficult to have, contain is a time like April to June 2020, where because of physical lockdown, it was impossible to move silver physically. And that's when the gold prices or the silver prices in terms of their international prices as or the Indian prices had a deviation because of the lockdown. But that scenario is no longer there today. And hence, from an international market point of view and an Indian market point of view, courtesy MCX silver also being there and the markets being interwound, we do not see big disparity in the spot prices and the Indian prices in general. Thank you.
Yeah, Chintan, you made a very super point about this kind of a so-called what we say as a black swan event or a sort of Six Sigma once in a 1 million type event, that there was a physical movement issue of a lockdown. Now, just for argument's sake and to connect back with the earlier point which we discussed, in that situation, friends, it's not just for the disparity which the silver ETF will have, but even in physical mode, like again, as I'm saying, as a retail investor, we can advise that, okay, you go and buy the silver either in physical format. So even for that, you would have faced a similar impact of the lockdown and the issues relating to the pricing which the imported silver would have suffered, even if you are doing it through physical mode of going through a dealer or to like a jewelry shop. So I just wanted to just bring that angle in, that even in case of such Six Sigma event, as an investor, you might be still better off doing it through this digital mode of ETF rather than at that point of time trying to do physical again.
Sure, that's well put. Now, we would like to ask Kshitij, you track commodities including precious metals day in and day out. Now, why don't you tell us about the factors that drive the prices of silver?
So while some other thing comes up, sorry, I'm just filling in the thing, like, structurally, like Chintan, just to connect back, like, even whether lockdown or what, some demand for silver as an Indian household always is there. Like in the morning, I was just remembering, like, I just put it up on my Twitter handle that, in a corner of one cabinet in my home, like from childhood, like, gift from my grandmother, there's a small Chandlika Kada. In our Indian household, since generations, it has been one of the most important gifts, like, silver. That will always be there. And whether it's just a easier access and comfortable or convenient mode of holding that particular a component in your portfolio or your asset allocation.
Sure, Anil. Thanks for that. Now, I was asking Kshitij about his view on silver. I mean, he tracks commodities, including precious metals, day in and day out. So, Kshitij, can you hear me?
Yes. So, firstly, thank you. Thank you for having me on a show. Normally, silver, general public believes that the demand for the silver is coming from the jewelry and the silverware. But the 60% demand of the silver coming from the various industry, and the silver having a both a physical asset and a precious metals, and there is an industrial use. Even a photographic industry having a demand for the silver around 5 to 8%. Only 30% demand coming from the jewelry and the silverware for the silver. Hello.
Sure. Yes. Can you tell us how is it different from gold and what is this gold to silver ratio?
Yeah. So basically gold having a more demand for the precious metal and the jewelry, but the silver having a both the demand for the industry and the demand for the.
I think we lost Kshitij.
So I'll take up that question while Kshitij probably logs back. So as Kshitij was mentioning, silver, unlike gold, is a base metal as well as a precious metal. 5,000 years back, silver was the first metal known to mankind and was used as a store of value and even as currency. While today, the applications of silver include and all our mobile phones, most of our mobile phones, electric vehicles, medical instruments, as well as the solar energy technology. The usage of silver is increasing at a rapid pace because of its nature of it being one of the best conductors of electricity. And hence, silver's industrial demand is what is driving the growth of silver in terms of its requirement in manufacturing activity. which is where silver is something which is an important asset class for all of us to have an exposure to. And apart from that, the difference between silver and gold, the major difference is that silver gets consumed wherever it is used, while gold generally is a store of value which is not consumed as such. So you cannot retrieve the silver which is there in our television sets or in our mobile phones or in a solar panel. It is difficult to retrieve silver or recycle silver. And that's why silver's applications being so varied, it is one of the most sought after commodities, and the production of silver is concentrated in a few countries like Mexico, Peru, and China, which account for 50% of the 27,000 tons of silver which are produced. So I think from that perspective, silver is a asset where, or silver is a commodity where the industrial use and the use in electronics is helping it becoming more and more popular. And even if we compare with gold, silver has a higher beta in terms of its usage. Whenever the demand goes up and economic activity goes up, silver tends to outperform gold in terms of its price movements. Thank you.
Thank you, Anil. I have a question for Preeti. Preeti, Lakshmi is India's first financial platform for women. And either gold or silver are generally used as jewelry and ornaments. What is the pull factor? Gold has a certain pull factor, and that's why it transferred to gold bonds and gold mutual funds. What is the pull factor in terms of silver? How do you perceive this new investment product?
Hi, Abhinav. I think firstly, I'd like to say that we live in extremely exciting times, particularly for investors, because I think the democratization of every asset class today offers the option for a very, very retail investor to participate in asset classes that they couldn't. And I think which is why silver ETF becomes exciting, because, like the earlier speaker said, if you had to make silver a part of your portfolio, you either had to buy it in the physical market, which is inconvenient as an investment and the costs are very high, or you would have to go to, I've done commodities for almost 12 years, commodity futures. So you would have to go to the futures market and take a position there, buy it, hold on to a leveraged position till you had the settlement cycle getting over. And that too, you had to buy in. It was not something that a retail investor could participate in. So I think ETFs really give one that opportunity, and the benefits have been highlighted very well earlier. I think from the perspective of investors, look, and this is a question, right, to all of us. How many times have we, when we've looked at creating our investment portfolios, said, okay, let's make silver a part of our portfolio? So I think typically for passive investors, silver really hasn't been that sought after asset class. It was always this debt, equity, and gold, which were typically the three larger asset classes that were pursued. And I think because gold being democratized much earlier, I think that pull for a retail investor and shift from physical gold to digital gold or electronic gold has happened. I don't particularly see as much interest in silver as an asset class for women, or particularly in the retail, not in the passive investors. I do think that the younger generation, particularly the Gen Z, who are more active investors and who are now looking at asset classes like, cryptocurrencies, etc., will find silver ETFs very exciting because, one, I think if you also look at volatility across the board, I would, over the last 20 years and possibly, Chintan can back me on this, we've probably seen higher volatility and probably over the last 20 years, more number of years where silver has given a negative return than a positive than gold compared to gold. And I think that makes for a very active asset class, a generation who wants to experiment. I think silver is a good choice for that. But coming back to women really being interested. Yeah, so, even in allocation, I think a lot of people, and even when I was doing commodity futures, we would say like it is part of your precious metal. So, you know, maybe the 5-10% of your portfolio, which you would allocate to gold, you would put a small amount to silver. I think over the years that has changed and silver has become an industrial metal. And therefore, I think I would put it more in the basket of equity for somebody who wants to put in larger amounts. And I think somebody who wants to experiment with silver, I would still put it in that basket of where you are experimenting with a lot of newer asset classes. I would possibly make it, you know, lesser than 1 or 2% of your portfolio.
Your suggestion is not to cut short on the gold allocation. Allocate in terms of equity.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, I think we've discussed this even earlier, right? I don't think silver can any longer be treated as a store of value particularly. I think it is the price movements now are in correlation with its industrial demand and use. And I think just the way you would look at all other macro factors when it comes to equities or, you know, companies doing well, corporates doing well, I think similarly you should look at silver and say, you know, if economies are doing well, if there's more development, will silver be consumed more and used more, and look at it more as that than gold, which is typically store of value, hedge against inflation. You know, I even say that today that gold is no longer a hedge against inflation. It hasn't been for a very long time, but it forms for that protector part of your portfolio. And I don't think silver typically is that protector part of your portfolio. It is, you know, it is the active investing part of your portfolio.
Preeti, going back to basics, what do you look when you are adding a new asset class to a portfolio?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, obviously, when you look at asset allocation, one of the key things you look at is your goals and the diversification across asset classes to meet those goals. So I think you would look at, I mean, typically we distribute in Lakshmi, we distribute asset classes really in two categories. One is your protector asset classes and the other is your value creators or your growth asset classes. So I would put all your fixed income interest bearing instruments into the protector asset classes and even gold in the protector asset classes and everything else, which is real estate, equity, silver. You know, today crypto is something that a lot of people talk about. From the perspective that it's not very regulated as of now, I would still stay away from it. But silver being, an actively sort of traded commodity, I would put that more in the growth asset classes.
Sure. Silver ETFs are also promoted as an asset for diversification. You also made the point. But since the demand for the metal is dependent on the economic activity, silver prices fall when the economy is weak, during which equity returns to moderate. So how will it pass the test of diversification? Anybody can take it? Yeah. Preeti, go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. Essentially, just like how you would diversify between, you know, in your value creator or growth asset classes, you would diversify into equity, maybe real estate, which is essentially saying, okay, these are more market linked. So I would actually, if there was one, you know, the differentiation would be interest linked or market linked. And I think the only exception there is gold, which I still consider as the protector asset class. But here you would look at, again, the same way that you look at equities, right? You use equities as a diversification in your portfolio. Silver, because it is not correlated to, no more to gold prices, not to equity. So it typically the correlation to all other asset classes is far lower. I think it makes for a better diversification tool.
Yeah, I'll just add on to that since you made a little bit larger and open question. I mean, in terms of, you are absolutely right. In certain situations, when there is extreme market movement, you know, that time nothing really works in terms of diversification because often all such asset classes, as Preeti mentioned, move almost in tandem. So at that point of time, if there is a very large risk-off environment, let's say we have seen that happened in 2008, just during the global financial crisis, it was not that at that time gold or silver was anything different. You know, everything was in a negative, I mean, falling market environment. But yes, otherwise, structurally, I completely agree with Preeti's point that if you are able to diversify a little bit within equities, little bit within, I mean, broadly, if you look at your asset allocation framework and you bucket your allocation into four key quadrants, one can be for your asset growth, one can be for income generation, then the inflation hedge linked with that, with the asset growth and income, and then the volatility hedge. So like your gold, silver will sit somewhere in between these two, you know? So yeah, definitely it can work, but good point.
This podcast is sponsored by Monarch Money. Are you saving to reach your financial goals? Reaching those goals isn't just about getting more money, but by managing what you have. And the best way to manage your money? Monarch Money. Monarch Money is a new kind of finance app that's intuitive, powerful, ad-free, and takes the headaches out of budgeting. Try it free when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. Monarch puts all your accounts, investments, transactions, and finances at your fingertips. With a complete view of your finances, you'll gain insights on your spending and find new ways to save. Plus, Monarch lets you customize your dashboard, collaborate with your partner, set custom budgets and goals, and track your progress toward them. See why Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it, and why the Wall Street Journal named Monarch Money the best budgeting app overall. Get a 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. That's monarchmoney.com/podcast for your free trial. monarchmoney.com/podcast.
So that you made, like, yes, there will be certain situations where diversification will just not work, whether it's gold or silver or anything, like, you know, and we have seen, but there will be very certain few instances what we have seen, at least in the past.
I'll just add one line to it, apart from what has been mentioned. In the last 20, 30 years, if we go back to history, both gold and silver have step-up jumps, and then they tend to consolidate for years. The last instance of silver having a step-up jump, apart from, of course, what has happened in the last 1.5 years, where from March 2020 to, I think, August 2020 or July 2020, silver went up by almost 100%. If we go back and see 2008, so January 2008, where equity valuations were expensive, from there till mid-2009, equity markets then corrected about 54%. In that time period, silver went up by 13%. This is January 2008 to mid-2009. Why I'm highlighting this is that when economic activity expands and the demand for silver in line with economic activity improves, silver does tend to have a slightly longer runway compared to equities. And we are today in a scenario where equities have had a good run for 2 years. Silver is, in some sense, made a consolidation for 10 years and is back at the price at which it was in 2010-11, that is 60,000 odd. So if there is an overshoot in silver, it can spike up significantly over the next 2-3 years. So also from a tactical allocation, if there is a repeat of 2008-09, silver can potentially act as a commodity which can generate wealth or create a negative correlation in terms of if equity markets have to be volatile, silver can give that added edge to the portfolio in terms of the upside, simply because the demand visibility of silver is strong. Thank you.
Also, yeah. Can I just add in here? So I think to add on to Chintan's point, I think, you know, even when we look at the usage of silver in industrial metals, I think the world today is moving towards, clean energy usage. So we are all, you know, sustainability, cleaner energy usage, etc. And all of those applications, we see a higher use of silver. And I think that's one point which may drive silver prices up in the coming few years.
Thank you, Preeti. Before we move on to the next question, I would like to inform listeners that in next few minutes, we'll be opening this forum for questions. So if you have a question to our panel experts, you can send us a request and we'll add to the this panel. Shridhar, I have a question. We talked about future outlook, but data shows that in the past 10 years, the CAGR return of silver is just 1.97% around that. And it has failed to beat inflation even. Any particular reason why it has underperformed over the past 10 years?
Exactly. Though silver is not performing well in terms of the inflation, the increase with the inflation ratio. The reason behind that, the gold is moving.
Sorry, Shadaj, your signal. Is this just me or?
No, we can't hear him. We can't hear him.
Yes, we can't hear him.
So again, I'll probably fill in by the time he is able to reconnect.
Yeah, sure.
So obviously, statistics in life and courtesy the fact that over the last 5 years and over the last 15 years, we've we've come out with probably 15 to 18 new funds where we've done back testing for almost all of them. The starting point of any discussion or any time period of any statistics becomes very important. 2011 is the starting point of the 2% 10-year return CAGR of silver, which we are speaking of. And in 2011, if you go back, silver was probably one of the hottest commodities because it had moved from, I think, about 15,000-18,000 in 2008-09 or 20,000 around 2008-09 to almost 67,000 to 70,000. I think it hit a peak of 80,000 in the futures market. So that starting point of 50,000 or 60,000 10 years back was on the back of 3 good years of silver. Maybe the audience would probably resonate more with the gold prices back then because silver and gold went up together. 2008 April, gold was 11,000 rupees. By 2011 April, gold went up to 33,000 rupees. So in a period of 3 years where gold tripled, silver had also gone up 4 times, I think. And that's where the starting point which we are discussing right now, silver was in a territory where it was very expensive, and hence for 10 years silver is digesting that overshoot it had at that time, and finally now it will probably come out of that overshoot and have probably be ready for the next step up jump. Thank you.
Coming to the ETFs, you know, one of the important factors when we are talking about ETFs is liquidity. After the NFO period, the ETF will be listed on the exchange and any transaction can be done over the exchange, and liquidity plays a major role. How is the liquidity expected to be for silver ETF? Anil?
Yes. Okay. Anil, please go ahead. Yeah.
Sorry, I was not able to hear anything. I was just trying to unmute. I could hear till the time Abhinav was speaking, then I just can't hear anything.
Sure.
I could hear your voice now, Chintan, but I'm sorry. Can somebody ask or repeat the question what Satya mentioned? I'm sorry.
Abhinav, you can go ahead and ask the question on liquidity to Anil.
Satya's question was on liquidity. After the NFO period, this ETF will be listed. So what kind of liquidity are you expecting?
Sure. Okay. See, I think what we spoke in the earlier opening side. So once the any ETF gets listed, the main liquidity moves on to the secondary market, whether NSE or BSE. And then there is a very healthy market maker ecosystem who will be putting in two-way quotes both on bid and offer, so that at any given point of time, let's say you want to buy new units or you want to sell your existing, you'll always find a healthy liquidity on the stock exchange platform. And structurally, if you are a very large investor, then you also have the flexibility or the facility available where you can directly approach the mutual fund as well if there is a certain large ticket creation unit size and above. Safe to say that, you know, there is very high level of comfort about liquidity after the ETF gets listed. What we have seen in the past, whether it is for a commodity-based ETFs as well as for equity or fixed income, any ETFs, no doubt, I mean, if the same discussion we were having, let's say in the last decade, maybe 10 years back, this question used to always come up that, you know, there is a little bit challenge. We feel apprehensive that after listing, whether we will get enough liquidity. But I think today, things are very much evolving. Of course, things keep changing and it's always available for more further depth and improvement. But I feel that in the current ecosystem, there would be very high level of comfort in terms of secondary market liquidity.
Sure. Chetan, you want to add a point here?
See, I always say that, I'll just take 30 seconds more. I always say that a success of a ETF will be when the underlying is large, liquid and transparent. Now, in this case, whether it's like silver as an underlying commodity, you know, it meets all the three criteria. The underlying is very large. A large quantity gets traded on a daily basis, is liquid, enough liquidity of the underlying security is there, and it's transparent. So today, smallest retail investor who wants to buy, let's say, even a 6,000 rupee worth of ETF, not 60,000 or not 6 lakhs. I'm saying as a broad multiplicator of the current broad level of valuation, it's easily available to see that what is the price as of today, or transparency is there. So I feel, again, I keep repeating this always, that for an ETF to be successful, as long as the underlying that you are investing in is large, liquid, and transparent, all three, then it can be very easy and it can be a good success. So I feel that for the silver ETF, being these three criteria are being met, liquidity will be a comfort, investors will get high level of comfort for coming in, going out with the comfort of transparency.
Sure. Chintan, you want to add a point here? Higher liquidity results in efficient price discovery. So you want to add a point on liquidity for the silver ETF?
Yeah, it's a virtuous cycle, in fact. Higher liquidity is more efficient price discovery, and efficient price discovery is also a fact where more liquidity comes in. So liquidity begets liquidity in any asset class or any volumes on the exchange which happen. The good news is that in India, with more than 7 crore DMAT accounts now relative to only 1.5-2 crore DMAT accounts, and the ease with which digital technology is being used by everyone, we see more and more participants, and with more and more participants, the exchange liquidity improves significantly. Second, in terms of, as an asset management company, it becomes our duty to ensure that the investors get the right price when they are coming on the exchange to buy and sell. So we appoint authorized participants who also ensure that on the exchange, the prices are more or less in line with what the international market price is converted into Indian rupees is. So this is already happening in the gold ETFs, and in silver ETFs also, there should not be any difference. Our responsibility as an asset management company is to ensure that we are managing the purity, etc., of silver which is held, as well as the liquidity. And that's where we probably come in handy when it comes to our experience that we've had with gold ETF. Thank you.
Thank you, Chintan. Before we ask the next question, I want to remind listeners that we are open for queries. And if anyone has a question, they can send us requests. Preeti, silver ETFs have been launched. Funds are also lined up to launch funds based on silver ETF, based on silver. Would that be a better option than ETFs? What is your view here?
I think, Abhinav, that would allow a further, like a smaller denomination once that happens. So I think eventually that will, allow for deeper penetration. However, I think ETFs is a great step to begin with. And I think, just like Chintan said, that, you know, two concerns typically for anybody who is, investing into ETFs or putting money into ETFs is really liquidity and impact cost. And I think I remember 2007 when the first gold ETF was launched. And from there to now, I think there's enough learning with the funds to manage both these issues. So, yeah, I mean, the ETFs is the first step. And I think the fund of fund is also soon coming on. So that will allow for more democratization. Smaller denomination will allow more active participation. And like I've been saying, I think there is enough hunger for newer products where one can, experiment actively, buy, trade, all of that. And I think also to Chintan's point earlier where, and you were asking about the CAGR, I think the opportunity in silver, more than just looking at it in terms of CAGR, is really the volatility is actually the opportunity. And I think that is where being able to do it in smaller denominations in an ETF will bring on a lot of liquidity.
Just if I may add, for those who have DMAT accounts, clearly, they can buy and sell on the exchange in real time. One unit will be about 60 to 63 rupees. 1 gram is about 60 to 63 rupees. For every day who has a DMAT account, there are many who either do not like to trade on the exchange or aren't able to trade on the exchange because of compliance reasons. And so they prefer the fund of fund route, which is ultimately the fund of fund is nothing but a vehicle or a mutual fund which is investing in the silver ETF. So any investor who cannot invest in the ETF for compliance reasons or does not invest on the exchange but is not having a DMAT account, also probably there are enough Indians who don't have DMAT accounts, they can make use of the fund of fund. And in fact, in India, if you look at the ratio also, the gold fund of funds are also a very large vehicle which ultimately invest in the gold ETF. So while the unit sizes on the exchange also will be very small, one unit of gold, one unit of silver are below 100. The fund of funds are an additional way of those who do not have a DMAT account to also participate. and hence the silver will be available for all Indians to invest, whether they have a DMAT account or don't have a DMAT account. Thank you.
Chandan, what would be the expense ratios for these the ETFs and FOFs?
Yeah, so the expense ratio for silver will be in line with gold. Of course, it will vary from fund house to fund house, but roughly about 50 basis points, 45 to 50 basis points for the silver ETF will be the supposed probably be the expense ratio for the investors. For the fund of fund, it will not be much higher. The fund of fund is just a wrapper. So most AMCs would try to keep the fund of fund costs anyways nominal, right? So maybe 4-5 bips higher than the ETF cost. So you can assume about 45 to 50 basis points will be the cost of silver ETF. And just to highlight, the cost of storage of silver itself is significantly high even for an institution. And hence, these 50 basis points cost is actually not comparable with any other ETF on equity side, because equity ETFs at 10, 15, 20 are possible. There is no storage cost involved. The storage insurance costs in silver and gold are reasonably high, and hence gold and silver are at about 45 to 50 basis points. Thank you.
Sure. Kshitij is here. Kshitij, can you hear me? So,
just one question before we ask Kshitij's question. Since we are on the topic of expense ratios, Chetan, I believe the storage cost involved in silver might be higher in term against gold, because you would have to store more silver, and that would take more space. So, how is that? Both expense ratios are comparable, gold and silver.
Yeah, so you're right that silver does take into account it's 80 ounces of silver per ounce of gold, so it does take a larger amount, but then, considering the fact that the current expected size of silver required or silver AUMs are likely to be lower, we've been able to negotiate a competitive price right now. So whatever I'm quoting is basis the prices right now. If it becomes too large in terms of the volumes, and if the storage costs do increase, because there has to be the vaulting agents also have a limited storage cost. So currently, based on the current pricing, this is what it is. And you are right that silver does take 80 times more space. But because the volumes are going to be lower right now, this is what the charges are going to be. And I don't see the charges going up exponentially, because effectively insurance costs are also a significant cost of storage, right? And those insurance costs are on the basis of value, where silver is probably cheaper than that of gold. Thank you.
That's a very interesting point. Yeah. Right, Abhinav?
Yeah, please go ahead, Satya.
Yeah. No, Kshitij, can you hear me?
Yes, Satya.
Question is to you. Yeah, going back to the outlook part, what are the fundamentals and charts pointing to at this point of time? Silver is considered, a non-yielding asset. With rise in interest rates going ahead, do you think the silver's appeal as an asset class comes down?
Yes, exactly. So we have seen that start of the interest rate high, the price of the silver may come down. And the reason behind that, if we can see that the 10-year bond yield of the US, once it start increasing, the silver price came down 63,000 to 60,000 levels.
Okay, so in the short term, you're saying that maybe the silver prices may come down in the short term. That's what your point is, right? Is it just me or somebody can hear Kshitij?
I think we've lost his line. Just to, again, add to what he was mentioning. See, we are in times where against an average 4% interest rates or 3% interest rates, which used to be there in US, we undershot to 1.5% in US 10-year. So there will be a normalization of interest rates, which will happen over the next 2 years. Normalization of interest rates should not be construed as interest rates going up, which will impact either commodity prices, the equity markets in a big way. Normalization of interest rates, in fact, will probably lead to normalization of economic activity also. And probably we'll be in a saner world. Today, just to highlight, maybe off topic, but it's important from a gold-silver perspective. The global debt has gone up from $110 trillion to $220, $230 trillion in the last 10 years. The global equity markets have gone up from $50 trillion to $110 trillion. So the lower interest rates and easy liquidity policy since the Lehman crisis has caused the bond bubble, has led to equity valuations being excessive. Those two need to get corrected first before we look at maybe silver or getting impacted. And that's where, as a fund house, our view is very positive on gold as well as silver for that matter. Because when the interest rates will go up, pension fund managers will have to move out of debt and move into either equity or debt or gold and or gold and silver. And even a trillion or $2 trillion shift to gold and silver can cause a massive price disruption in silver and gold. And hence, not being in gold or silver is not a choice, just that the percentages one can decide basis one's risk profile. These are the two asset classes which haven't done well for 10, 12 years now. And when the markets become saner in terms of interest rates, in terms of debt coming down, gold and silver will act as a good hedge for those who want to diversify their portfolio. Thank you.
Yeah, adding the point on the Chintan that definitely the silver is a both parameter that the inflation, it is hedging against the inflation, and the another part is the importance of industrial application. Now, with the opening of the economy, the market is going to rise, and definitely the benefit will come to the silver also. So we are also expecting the price of the silver will move come forward up.
Sure. If we can have final words from everyone, Preeti, we can start with you. Finally, if you should say, should you consider investing in silver ETF? If yes, to what extent? In few words.
Thank you, Sabda. Yeah. So I think first of all, like I've said, that as part of your asset allocation, silver should become an active, the part where you would look at growth or active sort of investing. For a passive investor, possibly not the best option to invest in. But if you are actively sort of looking at, using volatility to your benefit, silver ETF is a great option for you. In terms of really part of portfolio, I would put it to about, I would not say more than 1% or 2% of your portfolio. And I think it's a great, I will again say that for people who are actively there in the markets, it's a great opportunity. Once the ETFs are launched and they're there to be actively traded, there's enough liquidity. It's another asset class for you to participate in, which earlier we didn't have the option of, not particularly the retail investors or traders.
Great. Chintan, you want to go next? Chintan?
Yeah, thank you. Just to quickly sum up, we are in times where valuations for debt are excessive. In other words, there's no point in keeping money in debt in inflationary times, or it is not going to yield you much. Equity valuations, thanks to the last 18 months rally, have been on the higher side, with United States being at 250% market cap to GDP, India also being at 110% market cap to GDP, and in excess of 21, 22 times forward earnings. At such times, diversification into asset classes which have not done well for the last 10 years and can potentially do well over the next 2-3 years can help. And in that sequence, I think international equity investing is something which investors have taken up. There we believe Asian equities are something can be looked at, because they have underperformed significantly. And apart from that, the two precious metals which have stood the test of time for 5,000 years, which is silver and gold, are something which should be a part of investors' portfolio. We believe that in today's context, at least 5-10% in gold and maybe 5% in silver, therein and thereabout, should be a part of your portfolio to diversify your existing risk in equity and debt, and also to allow you to participate as and when there is a step up jump in gold and silver. Thank you.
Sure. Anil, I think you were not there when we were asking.
Yeah, no, I could hear you that you were trying to ask me some question, but I had moved to somehow listen only mode and I was trying to come back over here. So please, if there is a question, please ask. I'll be very happy to answer. Otherwise, then I'll just summarize it.
Sure. Before I go to the second question, the question I would like to ask you is, DSP Mutual Fund has recently filed the draft SID, for silver ETF. For gold, DSP has a DSP World Gold Fund that invests in gold mining companies. Why the ETF route for silver?
Superb question. And thanks for raising that. And I'm sure that must be a question in many people's and many investors and advisors' minds. I'll just quickly take a minute to go into the history earlier. So when we launched this fund in 2007, our thinking was that when you are let's say, bullish on price of a commodity. Let's say, for example, today sitting now and based on the seasonality, etc., you feel that I am bullish on the price of cement. Now, will we try to go and hoard cement and store it in a warehouse, or we will, instead of that, go and try to select a few good cement stocks and try to gain from the financial leverage and the operating leverage that that company enjoys? So very similar to that, what we thought at that point of time, that today for gold, anyways, investor can access it in different other formats. So let us try to give something which otherwise is not available, something differentiated, where we will invest into mining companies. And in some way, it did very well for investors because it enjoys the equity beta. So when you are investing in a company and the price of the company's finished product, like in this case, let's say gold or silver, goes up, then everything else remaining same, their profitability will go up faster, or higher profitability will be seen. No doubt, because of that, it works both ways. In falling market, it falls faster also.
Anil, we can't hear you. Satya?
Yes, we can't hear him. Okay, maybe...
Anil, I think there's some issue with the signal. We can't hear you.
Right, maybe we can go to Kshitij then, until we have Anil join back.
Unfortunately, he's also not here.
Can you hear me now? Hello.
Yes, we can hear you.
I can hear you. Yeah, sorry. So I was just saying, as an example, that in year, like let's say 2009, you know, which was the period where somewhat similar to comparable after the, let's say, crisis of the global financial crisis, and there was a good level of fiscal as well as monetary stimulus, which was creating a risk on environment. Somewhat similar, loosely, I would say, what we saw, let's say, last year and currently, where there is a consolidated effort by central banks and central governments. So at that point of time, we had seen gold bullion rising in, let's say, 2009 by about 19%, and gold equities was up about 41%. So, you know, somewhat like that, operating leverage is something what the investors get by investing into mining companies. Similar context, like today, if you see silver, some of the largest silver miners are already held over here, and many of the companies are diversified miners. So that's how we are trying to have ETF route for silver as a commodity, and for the others, gold and diversified, we are having it in the equities.
Sure. If you could put us in a few words, can you tell us, should an investor consider investing in silver ETF? And if yes, to what extent?
Well, I think I strongly believe that some allocation to precious metals as a allocation in one's portfolio should always be there. How much percentage at different points of time, based on the investor's life goals with which their financial investment is aligned, that can be suggested by the advisors like Preeti and other friends. I feel that yes, as I discussed earlier, across these four quadrants, as a good diversification, as a good asset allocation, feel, let's say, about 5% should be allocated. Let's say if I look at my portfolio, you know, as I said, for each individual investor, whether you are a large family office or individual retail investors like me, it will be different for each person. But yeah, broadly, I would say about 5 to 10% is a good number to have.
Great. Kshitij, you want to add final comments?
Yes. So I agree with Anil that every investor should have some or the part of his or her portfolio in the silver ETF. In common one sentence, I can say that whether for the capital preservation or capital appreciation, any portfolio has a room for some exposure to the silver and silver ETF.
Abhinav, you want to add something or shall we wrap?
We can wrap it here.
Sure. With that, listeners, it's a wrap. We have discussed what silver ETFs are and the investment rationale. You know, thank you all listeners for joining us today. We hope this session has been insightful to you all. And thank you all panel members also for your time. We hope you all stay safe and happy weekend.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone.
Satya, always great to be with you guys, and you guys always put up a very good all-rounded panel. So today's discussion also was really great. Thanks a lot for having us.
Thank you.
Echo thank what Anil said. Thank you, everyone. Thank you. Always thank great you. To be here. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. We will be back next week with a fresh episode. If you have any questions or comments, you can reach out to me at neil.b@livemint.com. To give us feedback, you can reach out to us also on HT Smartcast. We are present on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, LinkedIn and Clubhouse. To listen to more podcasts, log on to htsmartcast.com or suno naye nazariye se.